down at your side until I tell you otherwise.
I obey. I'm excited. Very excited. I have never had a sexual experience with two men like this before. And even though I know Smith won't be touching, only watching, it's exhilarating. What will he think of me? What will he think of Brick with me?
Chilla, Smith says, and he's closer to me now. Very close. So close I can feel the heat coming off his body. Listen carefully, okay?
I bite my lip again, unable to think.
I'm going to put these noise-canceling headphones over your ears so you can't hear anything. The only thing you'll hear is music and the sound of my voice when I feel like talking you through something. My heart flutters when I realize I will be blind and essentially deaf, because I won't be able to hear anything but what he wants me to hear.
Think of it as an erotic soundtrack to what's going to happen tonight.
What is going to happen? I ask. The fluttering in my chest turns to pounding.
You know what's going to happen, Brick says. Tell us, so we're sure you understand.
You're going to fuck me in front of Smith, I say.
Yes, Brick says. That's what's going to happen.
Maybe,
Smith says, placing the headphones over my ears. There's a small click as he flips a switch next to my ear, and then my world goes silent. I reach up for the headphones, but my hands are slapped away. Then the music starts, a slow, hypnotic bass.
Chilla, Smith says into the headphones. He must be talking into a mic.
Brick and I have decided not to follow the rules tonight.
He pauses and lets the music disorient me as a hand reaches for mine and begins to carefully help me walk. I have never been in this apartment, so I have no spatial awareness of where I am, where I am going, or even who I'm with.
We have decided you don't get to know who will fuck you tonight. You only get to experience it.
What? I ask out loud. But the headphones make my voice sound like an echo inside my head, just like Smith's. A hand slips over my ass, right between my legs.
You're wet, Chilla, Smith says through the mic.
Is he the one touching me? I stumble, but many hands are there to stop me from falling. Four hands, in fact. One slips between my legs again. One is squeezing my left breast. A mouth is on my lips, another on my neck. A knee pushes between my legs, forcing them open as I'm pressed up against a wall. I am breathing so hard, Smith's voice says,
"Shh, Chilla, just relax, you're fine."
I nod my head, but I'm still being kissed. My tongue is twisting with someone's. Bricks? Since Smith was talking to me? Is Smith's hand between my legs? A finger pushes into my pussy, and I groan. The kissing stops, and the hand on my breast comes up to my cheek to stroke it gently.
Do you like that?
Smith asks in my head. Yes, I say. I reach up for him, find my hand placed against a jaw, slightly stubbled. But both Brick and Smith had a light dusting of stubble on their faces this evening. One of them kisses me as the hand in my pussy goes away. One on my hip follows, and then there are only two hands. One man walks away, leaving my skin too cool where there was just heat.
Are you ready? Smith asks into the mic.
Yes, I say. I am led once again. I count the steps, and when I get to 21, I am guided to the left, then forward 10 more steps, until my knees bump into the soft edge of a mattress.
Crawl onto the bed, Chilla, Smith says.
I lean forward, placing my hands on the soft comforter, and then my knees, as I begin to crawl.
Stop, Smith commands. Lie on your back, Chilla, and then be very still for me, please.
Holy fuck. But I do as he asks, my legs straight, my arms at my sides, my blind eyes staring up. One of them removes my shoe, taking time to caress my calf. I moan, and the heat between my legs builds. The other shoe comes off with just as much attention. This time, he caresses my inner thigh, all the way up to my pussy. The mattress dips as he straddles me, one knee on each side of my thighs.
I'm going to kiss you now, Smith says. Kiss me back.
His body leans over me. His jacket is gone. Only the soft cotton of his white dress shirt touches my breasts as his mouth softly caresses mine. I kiss him back. We start slow at first, his hands on my breasts again, his tongue searching for a way inside me. I open my mouth, and there's a moment when we stop to just taste each other. And then there is no more hesitation. My hands are in his hair. My mouth can't keep close enough, even though his lips are crushing mine. Our tongues are twisting together, and he begins to rock his cock against my stomach. He pulls away, and my head tries to follow, desperate for more. Not wanting to break contact, not even for a moment.
Do you feel my cock?
Smith asks, dipping his hips down so he's rubbing me. He sits up and takes my hand, placing it over his thick, hard dick.
Take me out, Chella. Take me out and stroke me.
I release his button, then pull his zipper down. His dick. Holy shit. I picture it the way it was the other night. So hard, peeking through his open zipper in the club. I want to suck it, I say.
We'll get there, Smith says with a small chuckle. But first, Brick wants you to suffer. He's sitting in the chair, beating off already. You make him hot, do you know that? Do you know how badly he wants to fuck you right now, but he can't? Not until I'm done, anyway.
You're the one on top of me? I ask.
What do you think? He asks.
His hand wraps around mine, making me squeeze him harder. He helps me jerk him off.
Is this my hard cock, or someone else's?
I stop for a moment. Is there someone else here?
You wouldn't know, would you?
What? He laughs.
Maybe that's Quinn's cock in your hand. Maybe it's a total stranger's cock in your hand. What do you think, Chella? How many men are in this room right now, watching, wanting to take a turn with you?
What?
Does that make you uncomfortable? Smith asks. Do you want us to stop? Because we will.
No, I say.
So you're okay with these men in here watching? You're okay if they want to fuck you?
Are you okay with it? I ask. A small hesitation.
I wouldn't have them in here if I wasn't. I like to watch, Chella, but I want to fuck you very badly as well. And this is my chance to have it both ways. So make up your mind. Do you want to surrender yourself to us tonight, or do you want to walk out?
Who is on top of me now?
Wouldn't you like to know? And then he laughs louder. Does it matter? He asks. If you don't see them, then it's just one man, Chella. Think of it that way. Just one man, one cock. No one else is here but me and you. How about that? Can you make yourself believe that?
His hand is between my legs again, and I know exactly what he's looking for. Permission. He gets it by way of my sopping wet pussy.
But of course, that's just the fantasy you need in order to let us gangbang you tonight. We both know the reality. So it all depends, Chella, on whether or not you can live the fantasy and deal with reality later, or know for sure what's happening. Who is on top of you? Who will be fucking you right now?
He slipped a finger inside me, kisses me again, but just quickly, just enough to make me want more. When he pulls back this time, he withdraws his fingers and places them on my lips.
Suck them, Chella. Suck them while you think.
I do. I taste myself. I taste my longing on his fingers.
Should I keep going? Smith asks in my head. I'm more than happy to slip my cock in your mouth and fulfill your wish.
All I need is a yes. Is he on top of me? I try my best to think clearly. Does he wear cologne? I don't think so, and I don't smell any. But I can't remember if Brick wears cologne, or Quinn. And if this is some random stranger from the club on top of me right now, I'd never know. I have no idea who I'm going to have sex with if I say yes.
Chella, Smith says again. Tell me no and we'll stop. It's very simple. One word and we stop. We'll leave you and Brick alone and you can do whatever you want. Aside from fucking, of course. Because if I leave, you won't be getting fucked tonight, will you?
I don't want you to stop, I decide. In fact, stopping isn't even an option for me right now. My hands come up and find the face of the man in front of me. Brick or Smith, it doesn't matter anymore. I hold his face, their faces. I'm in. Whatever happens next, I'm in.
I can feel Smith's smile in my ears.
Good, he whispers in a low, low voice. Good.
Ben? He's gone. Just the hypnotic music remains in my ears. Whoever is on top of me shifts off to the side, and then the mattress sinks, and I know he's getting up.
Where are you going?
It feels like I'm talking to no one, like my words are a dream inside my head. I get no answer. I lie still for several minutes at least. I can feel that there are people in the room. More than one, I think. But how many, I can't know for sure unless I pull the blindfold down. I don't do that. I begin to count in my head, and I wait. When I get to 429, Smith's voice is back.
Did you miss me?
He asks.
Where did you go?
Just having a little conversation with Brick. To see what we'd like to do with you now that you've accepted our offer.
I draw in a deep breath.
And what did you decide?
No more talking, Chella.
Hands pull my legs apart, spreading them wide.
Your pussy is so pretty, Smith says. Should we lick it?
Fuck. Both of them?
Yes, I say, a little out of breath already.
The mattress dips on both sides of me, one hand on my left thigh, one hand on my right. I cannot move. I cannot breathe. Two mouths are kissing my stomach, two hands on my breasts, two fingers slipping inside me at the same time. I picture what it must look like, as if I were just an observer looking down from the ceiling. They are both naked now, like me. Their hard bodies pressing against mine. My hands are aching for both of them, and my palms wrap around two long, hard cocks. I pump them. The mic is gone. My head is filled with nothing but the hypnotic music and the sound of my own heavy breathing. One of them moves up, his mouth kissing between my breasts, my neck, my mouth. I'm hungry for him, whoever he is. Brick or Smith, it doesn't matter. He sits up, straddles my chest, and then the tip of his dick is pressing against my lips. I open my mouth and take him in, just as the other one lifts my legs and opens me up. His lips are caressing the folds of my pussy, finding my clit, and then his tongue flattens out and he licks me. Long laps of his tongue start to drive me wild. I am lost in the sensations. I've been blindfolded before, many times, but never by two men. Never have there been so many sensations coursing through my body. Never have I felt this sexy, turned on, ready to accept anything they want, ready to surrender to the erotic, carnal nature of sex. The man at my face pulls his cock from my mouth and kisses my lips. And then he is on the move, lifting my body up, sliding underneath me. His hands hug my stomach, his arms encircling my waist, surrounding me with his claim on my body. But at the same time, the other one eases himself between our legs. His hand is slick with lube, and he presses a wet finger into my asshole to get me ready.
Seconds later, a cock is there. I squeal at the pressure and the pain, but whoever is in charge right now slows down, lets me get used to his thick girth, and his cock slips deep inside my ass the moment I relax. Fuck. I'm still being held by those arms when another body is on top of me, pressing against my breasts as his mouth finds mine and we kiss. We kiss hard and soft and fast and slow. We kiss every way we can, like we are so damn hungry we can't control our urges. The blindfold is ripped away, the headphones removed from my head. Smith is on top. I lean my head back, and Brick is whispering in my ear.
Yes, he says. Yes.
Yes, I echo, looking at Smith again. His hand is between my legs, playing with my clit. The other one is pumping his hard cock. The look on his face is starvation. He scoots up, his muscular thighs pressing against Brick and me. And when his cock slips inside my pussy, I don't moan, I scream with pleasure. I am gone. I am done. I am right where I want to be. I am in heaven. They fuck me. I fuck them. Brick's strong arms never stop hugging my waist. Smith's punishing mouth never stops kissing mine. I come so fast, they both start to laugh while I writhe between them. Before I'm even done, Smith drags me off of Brick and says, "On your knees." I already miss them both as they jerk off. I open my mouth, and this makes both of them smile as they come on my face. I don't know if it's luck or skill or simply fate, but I am in heaven. Smith reaches over to the bedside table, grabs a washcloth, and cleans off my face. This is what I've always wanted. More, I moan, so sad that it's already over. I want more. Brick pulls me back into his arms, and we fall onto the soft bed, laughing. He pulls my back into his chest as Smith settles next to me. He places a hand on my cheek as Brick whispers sweet things in my ear.
"This is just the first time, Chilla," Brick is saying. "It will only get better."
Smith kisses me and smiles, then closes his eyes and hikes a leg over mine, claiming me, even though another man is hugging me tight. And we just breathe. This is why I'm here. I wanted them both. And now that I have them, I will never let them get away. Chapter 26. Chella. The next morning, Brick wakes early, and I wake with him. Smith is still here, which surprises me a little. I figured he'd be gone. But he's not. He's got his face buried in a pillow, legs spread out across the bed. "Where are you going?" I ask in a whisper.
"I gotta go take care of some things downstairs," Brick says, walking into the bathroom and turning on the shower. "Are you going into work today?"
"Yes," I say. "I have to be there early, actually. We have a delivery today, and it's scheduled for 8 a.m.
"I thought Matisse was the only exhibition until March."
"He is," I say. "But I'm in charge of the Denver Undiscovered Artist Show in February, and our gallery is where the jurors choose participants." Brick comes back out of the bathroom as he lets the water get hot.
"Sounds fun," he says, kissing me on the mouth.
It's a nice kiss. He holds my face as he leans in, and when he pulls away, I reach for him.
"I'm late, Chella, but I'll see you tonight, okay? One last Christmas party, then we're done."
He winks at me.
"Until New Year's, but we'll talk about that later."
One more quick kiss, and then he's gone, closing the bathroom door behind him as he gets ready for work.
"Work?" Smith mumbles beside me. "Really? Why the fuck do you work, Chella?"
"I like work," I say, turning my body towards his. We could stay here in bed all damn day. I'm pretty sure the rules are back the minute Brick leaves.
Mm-hmm, Smith says into his pillow. Doesn't mean we can't just sleep next to each other for a while.
I don't say anything as I picture what kind of hell that would be. I feel the need to get the fuck out of this bed right now before I start touching him, groping him, wanting him.
Unless, he says, lifting his head just enough so he can open one eye to peek at me. You can't control yourself around me. I have that effect on women, so I get it. It's okay.
I shake my head and smile. For real, Smith. You're right. I think your rule sucks. I'm not even ashamed to admit it.
He takes an interest in this revelation because he cocks that one visible eyebrow at me.
But I don't think you'd last long either, I add.
He turns all the way over on his back. His dick is so hard, it's practically sticking straight up in the air.
I roll my eyes. Why are you doing this to me?
I'm so good at self-deprivation, Marcella Walcott. I could stay right here. You could play with yourself until you come on your fingers, and I'd still be right here.
Really? I ask, turning on my side and propping my head on my hand. Then why did you take me downstairs last weekend?
He presses his lips together in a small frown. It was a conscious choice to piss you off.
Piss me off? I laugh. I think you failed.
Yeah, he says. I can see that now. But I really thought you'd have a little jealous streak in you. And if you saw Brick and Quinn fucking that girl, you'd walk out.
I just stare at him.
But you didn't. So either you have no jealous streak or you're here for some reason we don't know about yet. Which one is it?
I'm not the jealous type, I say without missing a beat. Smith smiles.
Good, because I'm bringing another woman to your house to live with me.
What? I ask. But Smith is already getting out of bed.
I got shit to do today, he says, already reaching down for his pants on the floor. So I'm gonna head out. Tell Brick I'm looking forward to tonight.
You are not moving another woman into my house, Smith Baldwin. I'm fucking serious.
Not jealous, huh? He asks, looking at me sideways.
It's got nothing to do with jealousy, I say, sitting up on the bed, kneeling. It's my house, not yours. You can have all the extra whores you want, but not at my house.
Smith just smiles as he slips his shirt on, looking down at his fingers as they button it up.
I'm serious. I better not get home tomorrow and find another woman in my house, Smith.
He knots his tie, still smiling, staring straight at me as he tucks his shirt into his pants and zips them up.
You're fucking with me, aren't you?
Not jealous, he says. No. You are. So why didn't you get mad when you saw Brick and Quinn with another woman?
I huff out some air. I don't even know them.
How about I don't move her into your house? How about I just bring her along during our time together? So I can fuck her. You know, since I can't fuck you. Would that work for you?
You are not going to do that.
I'm not? Smith asks, sitting down on the chair to slip his shoes on. Why wouldn't I? You're getting fucked by Quinn when I'm not around.
It's not the same. If you want her as part of our arrangement, then we should all agree. I'm not the one who made the rules for Quinn.
Okay, Smith says, grabbing his jacket off the back of the chair and slipping it on. I'm up for a renegotiation. I'll call the meeting for Friday. We can all discuss.
I just stare at him.
Unless you'd rather not, Chella.
I'd rather not. If you're serious, and I'm not sure you are, I think you're playing with me because it makes you mad that I'm not the jealous type.
He walks around the bed, fully dressed now, and stops in front of me, then leans down, takes my face in his hands, and kisses me. Not a long one or a passionate one, just a kiss goodbye. You're the jealous type, Chella. And if you don't admit it right now, I will be bringing that girl to your house tonight. She might even be there tomorrow when you get home. I might be fucking her when you get there.
He's such a liar.
And, Smith continues,
You can think I'm joking, or just playing with you all you want, but everything I just said will turn out to be true. Why are you being an asshole? Why won't you just admit you are the jealous type, but you're here for the kink, Chella? You like it dirty, you like it dark, and you are willing to overlook the fact that Brick and Quinn were both fucking another woman in front of you because you got to watch and get fucked by me at the same time. Silence. Admit it, Chella, or things are gonna get real complicated. Why would you do that? We had fun last night, right? Why fuck it up with this new game? Why won't you admit you're a dirty little slut who likes the dark side? Fine, I say, looking up at him. Fine, I like it. And you're right, I'm the jealous type under certain circumstances. But that girl last weekend wasn't even in the top million things on my mind at that moment. Who was on your mind, Chella? Smith asks, still smirking down at me. I let out a long breath. You, I say. You were. That's it. Just you. His smirk falls into a smile, and then he leans down and kisses me again. Short, sweet, and filled with promises. That's all I wanted to hear, Miss Walcott. I'm all for the self-delusional lies, Chella, but it's nice to get the truth every now and then. He turns away and calls out, "See you tonight," as he leaves. I'm still looking at the empty doorway where he disappeared when Brick comes out of the bathroom.
What the fuck happened to Smith?
He just turned into my obsession. That's what happened. Brick walks me up to my apartment on his way to work. He kisses me goodbye, too, and I have to wonder about the jealousy thing. How do they not get insanely jealous of each other? I wonder about this while I shower and get dressed for work. I'm still thinking about it when I take the elevator down and ask the valet to bring my car. I'd like to drive today. I'm tired of the chauffeur. They must have had this kind of arrangement so many times. They've already made the mistakes, and now they've got it all figured out. Maybe they do get jealous, but they're good at handling it. I don't think either of them are jealous of Quinn, because he's not even interested in me. He feels like a friend with benefits kind of thing. He's totally in love with Rochelle. Still, I know this with all my heart. My car comes and I get in and start the short drive over to the 16th Street Mall. Besides, I don't think Brick was really into Rochelle, and Smith didn't like her at all, so what's to be jealous about? Maybe they set it up that way on purpose. Quinn said one of them usually leads, and that person takes the number one spot. It feels right. It feels like Smith and I are negotiating our way out of this arrangement. In fact, it has always felt that way, since the very beginning. He's been very insistent. Moving into my house? What the hell is up with that? And he did take me down to the club last weekend. And, fuck me, totally within the rules, and yet, not. Not at all. I hardly think Brick and Quinn would call that little move valid, since I wasn't supposed to be downstairs at all in the first place, and they didn't know I was there. No, that was a total rule breaker. I pull into the garage, make my way over to my reserved space, and ease my car in. I sit there for a moment, still trying to figure Smith out, and then decide I have no clue what that guy is about. Not one bit. I turn my car off and get out, leaning back to grab my purse from the passenger seat. When I slam the door and turn around, I come face to face with Jordan Wells, standing on the other side of the car next to mine.
Hey,
he says, his voice low as he nervously looks around the parking garage. I am so taken aback at being here with him, I can't talk.
Sorry, he says. I don't mean to unsettle you, Chella. It's just, do you remember me?
Remember you? I ask, finding my voice.
From when we were kids?
Kids? I repeat, sounding like an idiot.
And the club, of course. I was the one.
He looks around the garage again.
I was the one with Quinn and Brick last weekend. You were up in the observation room, right? With Smith? I know you had a mask on, but we've all seen you with him.
What are you talking about? I ask, deciding to feign ignorance.
Chella, he laughs. It's okay. I'm not going to tell anyone, I swear. I was on that fucking waiting list for 5 years before they let me in. I'm not about to get myself kicked out now. I just wanted to know if you remembered me, because I remember you from when we were kids.
I search my memory for any recollection of this man. Where the fuck does he know me from? Which of the many, many fucked up times in my life did he witness?
You came to my 8th birthday, and then I was at your 9th birthday, remember?
He says. I breathe out a long sigh of relief. 9. 9 is okay. 9, I repeat over and over in my head. I have no clue who he is, nor do I remember him from any party other than the ones I've seen him at recently.
Sorry, I say, shrugging. I don't remember. But don't take it personally. I block out most of my childhood.
That's okay, Jordan says, coming around the side of his car. Anyway, the reason I'm bothering you is because 3 years ago when I got this assigned spot, you and I were here at the same time, just like now. He adds quickly, like he needs to get all the words out as fast as possible. And I said something so rude, it haunted me ever since. But you and I don't work the same hours, days, whatever, he says, lifting up his briefcase. I'm a partner at Wells, Well, and Stratford, couple blocks over. I work 80-hour weeks, and you, he laughs, you don't.
I have no idea what you're talking about, I say. He takes a deep breath.
That first day I parked here, I said, I don't care who had to die for me to get this spot, I'm happy I got it.
He frowns, deeply.
And then I got into work and found out it was your mother's parking spot and she had just died.
Relief floods through my whole body. I smile, like, big, and Jordan, confused, smiles with me.
Oh, Jordan, I'm so sorry you felt guilty about that. I don't even remember that day, but even if I did, believe me, I wouldn't have taken it the way you assumed.
He exhales a long breath of relief.
I'm so sorry, though. I've been sitting here for an hour and a half waiting for you, determined to make this right, now that I'll be seeing you regularly at the club. I just needed to get that off my chest. I didn't want you to think I was an asshole. I'm not, he says. I'm really not.
An hour and a half? I ask, still quite uncomfortable, but I'm getting a handle on it.
Yeah, and, you know, I've wondered about you a lot over the years.
I'm back to being weirdly uncomfortable, and it must show on my face because he amends quickly.
Not in a stalker way, Chella, just a curious way. I was only a kid. I thought you were pretty. And then one day you disappeared. It was just strange for me. Of course, I now know what happened.
I might fall over and die.
You went to boarding school, but I didn't even know about boarding school until I was 16 and my parents sent me away.
He laughs.
I was so clueless. Anyway, I'm glad I got a chance to apologize. He points off to his left. Want to walk together?
I point to the opposite direction, still trying to process. I'm going that way, I say.
All right, he says. I'll see you around the club then, okay? Have a nice day.
Jordan walks off. He might be whistling, happy about his cleared conscience. I'm not whistling as I walk over to work. I'm fighting off a panic attack.
Chapter 27. Smith. I'm just getting out of the shower when I hear the doorbell down on the first floor of Chella's townhouse. What the fuck? I wrap a towel around my waist and walk over to the bedroom window that faces the front of the house. There's a black car outside, idling at the curb. I smile as I think about what this might mean. Jesus Christ. Last night was the best fucking threesome I've ever been in. Ever. And it definitely wasn't Brick, because he's been with me for all of them. I wonder if they want me to go to the party with them tonight, and that's why they drop by. Shit, I'm not even dressed. But if they're asking, I'm going. And I don't want them to change their minds, so I yank my trousers off a hanger and pull them on, then hop down the stairs two at a time just as the doorbell rings again. I pull my zipper halfway up as I jog to the door, then disarm the alarm and pull it open. You lost your fucking key, or you just want me? I stop mid-sentence.
Excuse me?
Senator Walcott asks me.
I might be speechless. Who are you?
He asks.
And where is Marcella?
He pushes past me.
Cella!
He calls up the stairs.
Cella?
I stand there, looking out at the snow falling on the black car. What the fuck is happening?
Is my daughter here or not?
Senator Walcott demands a few seconds later. I tap the door closed and spin around, trying to pull myself together.
No, sir, sorry, she's, at a party tonight.
Not a lie.
Who are you? And if she's not here, why are you here?
Shit.
Do you live here?
I look around to see how much evidence there is of my habitation. The entire dining room table, which seats 12, is completely covered with files and papers. I've got two pairs of shoes in the hallway and a t-shirt hanging over the arm of the couch. The kitchen is littered with dishes I haven't bothered to put in the dishwasher, and if that wasn't enough, the house sound system is playing I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones. A song Cella would never, ever listen to, let alone own in her music library.
Yeah,
I reluctantly admit. I'm really sorry, Senator. Cella didn't mention you'd be coming for the holiday.
What is your name?
He snaps at me. I get my shit together and extend my hand.
Smith, I say, Smith Baldwin. I'm very sorry, sir, I just wasn't expecting you. And we have a party tonight.
Which really isn't a lie.
If you have a party tonight, then why aren't you there with her?
I'm meeting her there. She got off work early and I don't fucking work, but that's not something you tell your girlfriend's father. And I told her to just go ahead because the party is close to work.
Shit. I'm 5 minutes from her work right now. I'm totally fucking this up.
Why don't I call her? I ask, walking over to the messy dining room table to try to find my phone.
Yeah,
I say to myself. I'm gonna get her on the phone, figure this out. I find the phone under a pile of paperwork and press her contact. I smile at him as it rings, and rings, and rings.
She'll pick up, don't worry,
I say, hoping. He glares at me. The call goes to voicemail, so I spin around and say, Sweetheart, as I cut my hand over the phone. Your father is here, at home. Call me back. I end the call and turn around to face him again. I'm sure the music is just loud and she'll see the message in a minute. I put my hands in my pockets, realize when they drop below my waist that I'm still unbuttoned. And I have no shirt on. I clear my throat. So how long are you in town for? Senator Walcott just purses his lips at me, checks his watch, and then pulls out his own phone.
I'll call her.
But just as he says that, my phone buzzes. Hello? I say, smiling at him again.
What the hell?
Cella asks.
Your dad is here, Cella, at home. I'm here with him, at our house. You should talk to him.
I hand him the phone and he walks off, speaking as he goes.
What the fuck? Why didn't she tell me he was coming to town? I would have crashed at the club for a few nights.
I button my pants, grab the dirty t-shirt from the couch, and pull it over my head. Senator Walcott comes back just as I'm doing that.
We're meeting her at the restaurant.
We are? I ask.
For dinner?
Her dad snaps. Jesus Christ, he's kind of a dick. I almost laugh at my blasphemy, since he is pretty religious. I don't know him, but I know of him.
Oh, okay, I'm cool with dinner. Where are we going?
Get dressed, Baldwin. We're already late. And turn that music off.
Right.
I hit the off switch for the music as I hop up the stairs, hoping he won't follow me, because I don't know how to explain the fact that I'm sleeping in a guest room and not the master. But I don't have to worry about it. When I get back downstairs, put together, and my normally settled self, back in full swing, he's standing in the kitchen drinking a glass of my $900 a bottle scotch as he talks business on his cell phone. I wait patiently as he finishes his call.
When he hangs up, he looks me up and down like I'm cattle. I'm a damn good catch, I think in my head. He can look all he wants. I'm not a chump. Except I don't think he agrees with my self-assessment. Why do I care? I'm really not the kind of guy you bring home to your parents and all that good shit. But I'm not a chump. He waves his hand at me, signaling we're leaving now, and then heads towards the front door. You're riding with me, Baldwin. Chella says she has her car and I should bring you. Did she now? I mutter under my breath as I grab my coat off a bar stool. I bet she's thoroughly enjoying the fact that I'm stuck with her father right now. I wonder what Brick thinks about all this. I lock up the house and follow him out into the snow. He gets in the back passenger side, so I have to walk around and get in the driver's side. We close our doors at the same time, and then Walcott says, "The palm, Clarence," talking to the driver. "I don't get home to Colorado much anymore," he says, looking out the window. "Right, Chella mentioned that. We weren't expecting you for Christmas." "I'm only here for one night, Baldwin, so don't bother marking your territory." I raise an eyebrow at him. "I won't interfere with your plans." "Well," I clear my throat, trying to process this man. "That's not what I was insinuating. I'm sure Chella is thrilled you're here." "I'm sure she is, but as I said, I won't be staying." "Got it," I growl. Thankfully, the palm is right downtown, so I endure a 7-minute silence as we fight our way through snow and holiday traffic. We're dropped off just outside the restaurant, and Walcott doesn't even wait for me to walk around the car, just enters the building, me trailing behind him. I'm kind of pissed off by this point and wondering if she's still with Brick, since it is his night. But then I see Chella alone, dressed up in a black dress I'm sure she's wishing she didn't wear tonight, because her tits look fucking fantastic in it. I smile, forgetting all about her dick of a dad as I walk up to her, slide my arm around her waist, and pull her close as I whisper, "I love this dress," and then kiss her. It's not a sloppy, "I'm gonna fuck you later" kiss, even though I really want to piss her dad off with one of those. Just a nice one, which makes her smile. "So," she says, fake smile all over her face, "you've met my dad. How special." I nod. "Yep, so nice of him to drop by. I was afraid I wouldn't have your full attention tonight with that party." And then I look at the senator. "But now we don't have to go. You saved us from a boring night of hell, Henry. I owe you for that." I wink at him, just to thrust that knife in a little farther. "Okay," Chella says. "Dad, I know you've met, but this is Smith. We've recently started a relationship."
"And he's living with you already?" her father blurts. "You're not pregnant, are you?"
"Excuse me," I say, pulling Chella behind me a little so I can look this piece of shit in the eyes. "She's not," I say in a low voice, "but even if she were, she's a grown woman, Walcott, and she would tell her father about it when she was good and goddamned ready."
"Senator," a woman says, obviously uncomfortable with the tone of our conversation, "we have your table ready. Would you like to follow me?"
He stares daggers at me for a second longer than is polite, and I stare back. He can be a big old dick to me all he wants, but I won't let him talk to Chella that way. Not while I'm around, and especially not in public. Chella sighs as her father follows the woman.
"I'm so sorry," she whispers as we walk. "I had no idea he was going to show up. He told me he couldn't make it for Christmas, so I naturally assumed..."
"Shh," I hush her as we walk. "You don't need to make excuses for him to me, Chella. I'll handle this." We're seated at a table for four next to a window and settle in, handing our coats over to the waitstaff, who are overeager to please the senator. His reputation for being an asshole precedes him. After the server tells us the specials, we look at the menu in silence. I reach under the table and grab Chella's hand. She shoots me a look of panic and shakes her head, mouthing, "Stop it," at me. But I shoot her a lopsided grin that says I'm absolutely not interested in backing down from this one. "So," Walcott asks once we've ordered, "what do you do, Mr. Baldwin?"
"Dad," Chella laughs, "Smith Baldwin?"
she asks him, incredulous that he doesn't know who I am.
I'm talking to your friend, Marcella. I'm sure he can speak for himself.
He gives her a glare so ominous I feel her wilt next to me. I squeeze her hand harder. She doesn't squeeze back.
Nothing, I say, answering his question. Excuse me?
Her stunned father replies. I don't do anything, Senator. I don't have a job. He has the smuggest look on his face when he turns to Cella with raised eyebrows.
Not exactly cream of the crop, is he?
Actually, Senator Walcott, I am the cream of the crop. I don't have a job because I'm richer than God, sir. I'm worth $47 billion, to be exact, and my mission in life is to give it all away.
Really?
Cella asks, turning away from her father and towards me.
Really?
I say, taking time out from the Mexican standoff her father and I are having to smile at her bewildered face.
It never came up, I shrug, so I didn't bother mentioning it. Giving it away?
Her father asks, his temper tempered.
What does that mean?
Well, I say, scratching the stubble on my face that I forgot to shave. I don't have a job because I don't have time for one. I spend my days looking for people who need help. Sometimes that's a corporation that I feel can make a difference. Sometimes it's a nonprofit. Sometimes it's just a single mother who needs a hand up. You see, I give out $1.6 billion every year, and it's not as easy as it sounds to spend that much money, Senator. At least for private sector people like myself. I'm sure you government types could find a good war to spend that on, but that's a conversation for another night. I look over at Cella. Her mouth is hanging open. I think I just really fucked that up. I'm about to apologize to her when she says, I had no idea, Smith. Oh, well, maybe she's impressed. Maybe I'm not the dick she thought I was. No, I say, I don't like to talk about it much, but since you asked, Senator, let me just be a little more thorough with my explanation. You see, when my parents died and left me with all this money, I had some idea what it might do to me.
Do to you? The senator asks, frowning.
Corrupt me, sir. Turn me into someone people don't like? Like you, I think. But then I take it back, even though I didn't say it. Because he did something right. He helped create Cella. And she's as sweet as they come, even with that dirty dark side she's trying to hide. I know there's more to her life, her past, and her motives for being with me and my friends, but I don't care. It's just not a factor in how I feel about her as a person. She likes the dark stuff, just like me. Just like Brick, just like Quinn. But we're not bad people. None of us. And neither is she. So I decided back when I was 18 that I would not own anything.
Own? The senator is really struggling now. What does that mean? Surely you own things, Baldwin.
No, I say calmly. I don't, actually. I live with friends, which is why I'm living with Cella right now. I don't own a house or a car or even these clothes on my back. I haven't purchased something for myself in over a decade. It took me a while to get the hang of it, I'll admit that. Some nights I had no friends who'd let me sleep over or feed me, or let me have one of their hoodies or coats on a cold night. So I'd give in and get a hotel room, order room service, and buy some new clothes. But each time I failed, Senator, I'd spend the next week or two feeling guilty. And I'd try harder the next round. I've made it my mission in life not to spend a single dime of money on myself. My money wasn't meant to better me, sir. It was meant to help others. So that's what I do with it. I give it away.
Brick? Cella says in a soft voice. And Quinn. They're the ones who stuck by you, weren't they?
I nod my head.
And that's why you guys share everything, isn't it?
Everything, Cella, I say, looking down at her. Even you, I don't add.
Wow, she sighs. Just really, Smith. Wow. I don't even know what to say to that.
It seems the senator is speechless, but I'm not really talking to him anyway, so I turn to Cella and speak to her. I live a great life, you know? I'm not lacking for anything right now. I live an extremely luxurious life through the generosity of friends. I look at Walcott and smile.
I'm very much enjoying your daughter's house right now. It's exquisite.
Chella bursts out laughing. She covers her mouth with her hand, like she can't believe I just said that.
Really, I owe you, I guess. She said you purchased it for her, and even though she hates the furniture, I sort of dig it. Though I've gotten a friend to donate us some new pieces. And I got free paint for that disgusting orange wall.
You're killing me, Smith. Chella laughs. But her smile is so big right now, I'm flying. I'm so fucking high off this moment. Sitting here just being real with her. No games, no players, no sex.
And yeah, I guess I could piss people off and they might stop caring about me, stop wanting to help make my dream come true, and I might be out on the street again. Nowhere to go, nothing to eat, no coat on a winter night. But I'd find a place, Chella. I'd be okay if that happened.
She beams at me. And then, before I even realize what's happening, she leans over and kisses me right on the mouth.
I'll be your friend forever, Mr. Baldwin. Ever and ever.
Yeah, I say, eyeing her father from the corner of my eye. About that. You see, Senator, I might have lied about one small thing.
Somehow, Mr. Baldwin, I think there's a lot of lies inside you.
I lied about Chella. Because I would like to own something in this lifetime. And that something is your daughter.
Chapter 28. Chella. I have no clue what's happening right now, but my mouth is hanging open in shock. What did he just say? I blink my eyes hard 3 times and then look over at my father. He's scowling and shaking his head at me.
Well, Chella, if you are trying to challenge me tonight, you certainly succeeded.
Don't look at her, Smith says. Look at me. I'm the one talking to you. Oh my God. The gaze my father drags over to Smith is nothing short of pure disgust.
You're no longer a part of this conversation, Mr. Baldwin. This is a family matter between my daughter and me. So you can either sit here and keep quiet or you can leave. Those are your options.
Smith opens his mouth, but I grab his arm. Smith, I say softly, just let him talk, please. Smith doesn't stop staring at my father, but he does stay quiet. Daddy, why are you here? You told me 2 weeks ago you weren't coming for Christmas, so I made other plans. I don't mind rescheduling for you, you know that, but it's rude to ask for this last minute. My father inhales deeply through his nose. He's still a very handsome man, but it's a very curated kind of handsome. Daily sessions with a private trainer. His fingernails are perfectly manicured. His hair gets attention from the best DC barbers. His hair is almost pure silver, at least he doesn't dye it, and his skin has been smoothed by a plastic surgeon. Smith is polished, very much so, but he's not perfect in any way. He's always got a flaw on display, like tonight. His hair is kind of wild, not the neat, slicked back look he usually wears. I like it. I like the mess.
You may not be aware of this, Marcella, but I haven't dated since your mother passed 3 years ago.
Jesus Christ, that's what this is about? 2 conversations about my mother in 1 day? Just what the fuck?
But I've met someone.
My father stops to clear his throat.
She's 23.
Smith's laugh is loud but short. Kind of a classic, ha! I see. That's about all I have to say about that.
I just wanted to let you know I'm moving on in life.
Okay, I say, but I don't know why you felt this deserved an unannounced face-to-face meeting. Is there more to this? Like, is she pregnant? Another incredulous burst from Smith. My father glares at him.
She is,
my father says.
Well, that explains the accusation you just lobbed at Chella,
Smith interjects, unable to stay quiet any longer.
Feeling guilty much, Senator?
My father ignores him.
We're getting married next week. You're not invited, and I didn't want you to hear about it on the news.
I wait for the stab of pain, the kind that comes from betrayal, but there's nothing there in my heart. Just a few weeks ago, I'd be devastated by this announcement. But now? I shake my head at my father. No, he has no power over me anymore.
I came here to say goodbye, Chella, to the life you were part of, to your mother. I loved her once, and I hope she's found her peace in death, but I can't, won't, be trapped in that life any longer. I'm moving on.
The three of us sit there in silence for several seconds. Is there anything left to say?
Are you finished?
Smith asks, his voice low and calm. My father just looks at me, frowning.
I hope he's the one. I really do, Chella. He's pretty much what you deserve.
He drags his eyes over to Smith, who stands up and extends his hand to me.
I know who you are, Mr. Baldwin.
Good, Smith says. Let's go, Chella. I don't think there's anything left to say. I take his hand and draw in a deep breath as I stand up, looking down at my father.
I'm sorry I was never the daughter you felt you deserved, and I hope this new family gives you what you need.
I don't say goodbye. It's not even necessary. I just let Smith lead me through the restaurant. We collect our coats and wait for the valet to bring my car in silence. I let him drive us home. And when we're sealed up tight inside the dark garage, with nothing but the sound of silence between us, he sighs and says,
I'm so fucking sorry.
I open my door and get out. Smith does the same. Don't be sorry, I say as we walk to the door of the house. This has been coming for a very long time. Smith opens the door and places a hand on the small of my back, ushering me inside. He drops my keys on the table where I usually keep them. The lights are all on, like he left in a hurry, and when I walk through to the kitchen, I notice just how much of this place already belongs to him.
Do you want me to call Brick for you?
Smith asks. I shake my head and start climbing the stairs.
Chella, Smith calls after me.
I just keep climbing.
Chella,
Smith calls again. I guess if he had something to say, I might stop and listen, but he's speechless, and my name isn't enough to pull me back from this darkness. When I get to the top floor, I start taking off my clothes. I hang up the dress, slip on a white bathrobe, and start the water for the tub. Smith is standing in the doorway of my room. Not in, not out, but between.
What?
I ask him as I go looking for a bubble bomb in my closet. Just say what's on your mind and then get out. I don't want to talk about it, and I don't want company tonight. Go back to the club and leave me alone. I find what I need and go back into the bathroom. Smith is in that doorway before I can close it up. Whatever. If he wants to gawk at me while I take a bath, who cares? I drop the bubble bomb in the hot rushing water and stand there watching them form. When I'm satisfied with their progress, I drop my robe and step in. It's hot, but not hot enough to keep me from sinking down and going under. I let the calm thunder of the water drown out my life on the other side, close my eyes, and relax. He can't hurt me. He cannot hurt me. And he didn't. I feel so much nothing inside my heart. There's an echo in there. I sit up and rub the water out of my eyes so I can open them. Smith is still standing in the bathroom doorway. We stare at each other for a few seconds, and then he says,
Do you know why I liked you so much?
When, I ask, when did you like me so much?
That first night. After I took you home, I looked you up on the internet.
Oh, I say, looking away.
There's not much about you online, before you took this job at the gallery anyway. There's plenty about you recently, but it's the stuff that came before that intrigued me.
I'm not talking about it.
Just listen to me, Chella, okay?
I shrug and start playing with the thick, frothy white bubbles.
When I found all the gaps in your childhood, I was excited.
I give him a sidelong glance from the corner of my eye.
Why? Because my childhood is the same way.
Did you look me up, Chella, on the internet?
I nod. Yes. And what did you find?
Not much, I shrug.
Don't you think that's kinda cool?
When I glance up at him this time, he's smiling.
What's cool about it?
That we were both secrets.
Secrets.
I don't know if that's true about you, but I was a secret. My parents couldn't have children. They tried for years and years. They considered a surrogate, adoption, all that IVF stuff. And just when they were about to give up, my mother got pregnant. She was 43 years old.
I sit up in the tub, unable to curb my curiosity, and stare at him as he talks. He's still smiling, like all of this is a happy memory.
And even though they did all the tests and they came back with good news, their child was normal. Perfect. I wasn't, Chella. I wasn't even close to perfect.
What do you mean? I ask, looking down at my bubbles again. You look pretty perfect to me.
Well, that's the thing, he replies softly. Perfect on the outside is only half the story, right?
I swallow hard and nod at him. What happened with your parents? He's frowning when I look up, shoving his hands in his pockets as he leans against the door jamb.
They sent me away to special schools.
But there's nothing wrong with you, Smith. Why did they send you away? He sighs, but it doesn't come out like regret or sadness, maybe resignation.
I didn't talk until I was 4, and then no one could understand me. Language was hard. It didn't make much sense. And even when it did start making sense and the words came out, I stuttered so bad, it didn't matter. They still couldn't understand me.
I draw my legs up and hug them to my chest. How old were you when they sent you away?
5, he says. As soon as they realized I was damaged. Too damaged to take out in public. Too damaged to show off at parties.
That really sucks, I sigh.
No, Smith says, shaking his head.
No, it was the perfect answer for me. I was raised by a speech pathologist named Claudia Kramer. She was an amazing mother, like perfect, you know?
She baked cookies and made costumes for Halloween. She didn't work, didn't have to. My parents paid her well over $100,000 a year to take care of me, help me talk, help me adjust. We lived in this amazing little house up in the mountains near Aspen. I didn't go to school. I had private tutors. I had the best fucking childhood, Chella. All because my parents threw me away.
I look away, sadder now than when I first got in this tub.
My parents still pretended they were my parents. But by the time I was maybe 10 or 11, I was Smith Kramer in my head. I was very smart, no matter how bad my language skills were. I took the GED at 16, and my mom, Claudia, she helped me take courses at a local college. I didn't have much to do up there in the middle of nowhere, so I learned things. I got smarter. But my parents were old by that time. Mr. Baldwin was in his late 60s, and Mrs. Baldwin wasn't far behind.
How did you get so rich, I ask, if your parents didn't bond with you?
He shrugs. They had one heir, me. For better or worse, I was their biological child. So I got it all. Every fucking penny of it. Over $60 billion, Chella.
Fuck, Smith. I didn't know anybody had that kind of money.
I lost some of it in taxes, which was fine, even before I realized there's no way to lose that kind of money. It grows on its own, Chella. It's so big, it just grows. And the day it hit me that I'd never run out, no matter how much I spent or how much I lost through carelessness, it made me feel sick inside.
So, I whisper, you decided to give it away.
He nods. And like I told your father, it's not as easy as it sounds. That's what I do all day. I don't even think I've told this story to Brick or Quinn. I don't think they even know what I do all day. They know I give everything away. They know I only take donations and refuse to buy myself things. That's why Brick lets me live at the club.
You want to know my secrets, I say in a low voice as I wiggle my toes under the water and stare at the bubbles. You're telling me this, so I'll tell you mine.
I want you to know I'm okay.
I look up at him again.
I'm fine. They hurt me. What they did, how they reacted, it hurt me, Chella. But I had love. I had everything I ever needed and more. I was lucky. I want you to know I realize that.
I press my lips together as the tears heat up my eyes.
And I'd like to know if you were loved, too. Whatever that secret is, Chella, I don't care about it. I just need to know if you were loved, if you feel lucky now that it's over.
I start sniffling as I shake my head. I wasn't loved, Smith. I was used. And even though I understand that his rejection tonight, his repudiation, was for the best, for all of us, I don't feel lucky. At all. I pull the plug and stand up. Smith hands me an oversized, fluffy white towel and watches as I wrap it around my body. He hands me another one to put around my wet hair, and then he follows me out of the bathroom, retreats to stand in the bedroom doorway, and watches as I dry off and get dressed in a t-shirt and shorts.
Where did you go, Chella?
He finally asks, when I'm pulling back the covers of my bed, ready for sleep.
Just tell me that. Where did you go when they made you disappear?
I turn the lights out and climb in bed. Smith is backlit from the light filtering in from downstairs, just a black shadow surrounded by white. I was with my mother, I say. She was crazy, mentally ill in a way I still don't understand. She was consumed by religion. We lived in church places, where the faithful meet for spiritual retreats.
Like a cult?
Smith asks, confused. And yeah, I guess if I had to put a word on it, I'd call it that. But I say, no, not really. It was all legitimate. They were all affiliated with real organizations. Is all he has to say about that.
Where was your father for all this?
DC, I say. He let her do whatever she wanted. He doesn't believe in divorce, and he wasn't willing to risk his career to make things right. He felt it was a good compromise for me.
What's that mean? I don't understand that last part, Smith says.
No, I say. Me either. I turn over in bed, my back to him now. Good night, Smith. Thanks for playing along tonight. I appreciate it.
Good night, Chella, he says, after about a minute of silence, and then he pulls my door closed, blocking out the light, leaving me alone with the dark, with my shame.
That's all I have left now, right?
It's just me and my shame.
Chapter 29. Smith. Chella leaves early for work the next morning. She's cheerful and upbeat, like last night never happened. I don't know if that's good or bad. Maybe both. I spend the day putting together the last batch of charitable donations for the year, and then have the club car take me over to my foundation headquarters to drop everything off. When I'm done, it's barely noon, so I go where I always go. The club. It's very busy today, even though the white room isn't open to the public. Members are here for lunch and drinks, since Christmas is on Sunday, and just about everyone is off work already. I head upstairs where Quinn is sitting in my bar, sipping a beer. Hey, he says when I sit down. Brick said there was drama last night. Shit, I say, shaking my head and motioning for the bartender to bring me a scotch. Her fucking father is an asshole. Quinn nods his head. I can only imagine. Why? I ask. Did she tell you about him? I'm instantly jealous, picturing all the intimate conversations Chella might be having with Quinn. He shrugs me off, though. He's on the news all the time. I can't stand that asshole. So smug and full of himself. Did Chella ever mention her childhood to you? Quinn shoots me a look I can only assume is suspicious. If she did, I wouldn't tell you what she said. It's one thing for Brick to tell me you called her in the middle of their date. It's another to ask me to spill about our time together. He's right. I know he's right. We don't talk about it for a reason. We keep the jealousy at bay by living three completely separate lives with the woman we choose to share. Sorry, I say, backing down. I'm just trying to understand her better. And she's going to be alone on Christmas. Did you get her a gift?
Of course, Quinn laughs.
You didn't?
The bartender comes with my drink, so I use that time to think.
I'm trying to think of something she'd like.
She's a woman, Smith. She likes attention. Real attention. So give her that and you'll make her happy.
Is that what you got her? I ask.
We're on a different level these days. You don't need to worry about what I got her.
I wonder if she's getting us something.
Why do you think she went shopping alone the other day, dumbass?
Where's Brick? I ask, changing the subject. What's going on with the club this weekend?
Parties, brother. All weekend long.
You gonna attend any?
I almost snort my drink.
No, I'm with Chella until Saturday night. Why would I?
Quinn shrugs.
I'm going.
He always does. That's not news.
So next week, Quinn asks, you think she's ready?
I'm ready, I say, then regret it. But yeah, I think she is. I'll know more tonight.
You don't sound very excited, Quinn says, eyeing me. More suspicion.
You have something to say about it?
No,
I don't.
And I am excited. It's been a long fucking time since we had someone together like that.
I'm really looking forward to it, Quinn says. I can't fucking wait. What night should we aim for?
Monday, I say. Why not start the week outright?
So my night, Quinn ponders this.
I'll think of something special and let you know.
He stands up, downs the rest of his beer, grabs one last French fry from his almost empty plate and says, I gotta wrap some shit up at work. See you later.
I wave him off and stare down at the bar. Lucinda is here again, and when I look around, I don't see her husband.
Hey, Brick says, coming up the steps into the bar and walking over to my table.
How did it go last night?
With the father. He takes a seat across from me.
Shit, I say before taking a long sip of my drink. That man is a complete asshole.
Brick laughs.
I figured that, but no trouble?
No, I say, thinking about how amicable Chella was last night.
She didn't stand up to him, not even a little bit. And I can't figure out if she's just not interested and possibly happy he's leaving her behind to start a new life, or she's so sad she's locking it up inside. I just don't know her well enough to figure that out. He came to tell her he was getting remarried, and she's not going to be a part of his new life.
What the fuck?
Brick says.
Who does something like that?
That guy, I say, sipping my scotch. Anyway, I'm gonna get her a Christmas present. What'd you get her?
I'm not telling you, Brick says, smiling.
He knows I suck at this shit. I'm not a relationship kind of guy. And yeah, I got Rochelle presents all the time, but I never put any thought into them. I just spent money on her. She wasn't like Chella at all. Nice things were new for her when she met us. Chella is steeped in nice things. Nice things aren't the same thing as love and friendship. I know that better than anyone. And I'd like her to feel my gift is a sign of our love and friendship. Do I love her?